Hi, so we're here with Max Egan. He is a filmmaker, a radio show host, and a researcher, and much, much more. I'm from Queensland, Australia, and thecrowhouse.com. Welcome, Max Egan.
Hi, Angela. Nice to be here talking to you.
I'm glad you could make it. I know you're very busy with your movie coming out. Well, not out, but you're still working on it. It's called Transformation. Can you talk a little bit about the movie?
Well, what it's about, I mean, it's actually, I'm constructing it in four parts, and because the research has been ongoing, it's been taking quite a while to put together. It isn't that I've been working on it all the time, it's just that it's been ongoing research, plus I've been busy with so many other projects. But the first part of the film, as I said, it's in four parts.
Right.
The first part is called Transformation, two words, and it kind of describes how humanity's been put into the trance that they're in. Right. And the second part is called Transhuman, and it talks about where they are attempting to take humanity. Right. The third part is called Transformation, one word, which talks about how they intend to do it. And the fourth part is Transfiguration, which discusses remedies that we could use to change the direction that they're trying to maneuver us into.
Right.
That's the basic rundown of the film anyway. It's a brief outline of it.
That's very clever. I heard you talking about it yesterday on the radio show that you did there about touching on the chemtrails and the nanobots and whatnot that are in it.
Well, yeah, that's really been interesting research. I've actually been looking at some of the research from Cliff Carnacom from the Carnacom Institute. There was also a presentation that was put out by Sophia Smallstorm, who is the lady who made 9/11 Mysteries, and she used a lot of Clifford's research in that production. And there's also my own research I've been doing with a microscope and checking things out. And it would appear that, yeah, there are nanoparticulates in the chemtrails. And it makes perfect sense, really. If you really look at the big picture, the piece of the puzzle that was missing was the nanoparticulates in the chemtrails, because that kind of ties the whole thing together. And you can see how this ties in with the transhumanist agenda, it ties in with Agenda 21, it ties in with the smart meters, all of this sort of stuff. It all fits together. And it also answers the question as to why would the elites be spraying themselves. It also covers the question of the cost of chemtrailing, because that's a big question with people as well, the enormous cost of such an activity. But if these are self-replicating nanoparticulates, then actually the cost is quite negligible. So it's kind of like the last piece of the puzzle, and it all makes absolute sense when you realize that that's what the chemtrails are.
Right, right. How do you think the smart meters are working in? Because they just installed them in my building. We got kind of hit with it here in BC as well. How do you think that works in with the chemtrails working together?
Well, the thing is that smart meters can send and receive, and that's the way they work. They send signals to each other, they receive signals. Not only do they monitor everything that goes on in your house, but we've really got to look at what the possibilities of this technology are. I mean, I mentioned on a radio show in Sydney this morning that they're actually game companies for the last 2 or 3 years have been developing games or experimenting with games that you can control these games with your brainwaves. And this is a two-way street. I mean, we're electrical beings. Everything we experience is electromagnetic.
Right.
So if you're installing a device near your house that can send electromagnetic signals into your body, and your body is infused with nanoparticulates, and these are obviously programmable because they're machines. If they're metallic nanoparticulates, of course they're programmable. So what is actually being done to the human race without the knowledge of the human race? And when you look at this whole electromagnetic grid they're putting in place, well, you know, if you take into account the fact that chemtrails are nanobots, then it all starts to make a lot of sense, and you can see where they're going with this.
Right. And actually, I remember an episode of The Outer Limits where they did exactly that. It was called like the new being or the new human or something. I can't remember the exact episode, but it was basically this, you know, crazy scientist that made these nanobots that went into this guy and basically changed him into a whole different creature after time, right? Because the nanobots would fix whatever they thought was a deficiency and create this new type of human being, which was kind of scary. It's funny that they put it out there, though, and they always do.
Oh, they always do, absolutely. But that's where the technology is going. And They even talk about it. They talk about how one day the entire Earth and all plant life and mineral life and even the rocks will be infused with intelligent nanoparticulates, and that we'll eventually send these nanoparticulates out into space so we can expand our human-machine civilization. It's basically the assimilation of all life on the Earth and transforming human consciousness into something like the Borg and then sending it out into space to assimilate the rest of the universe. That's the plan of these people. They're completely insane.
Right, yeah, and they definitely are. And that's one thing, too, I wanted to kind of get into as well, is the dangers of kind of we have the whole spiritual movement. And a lot of them, you know, think that they're doing good by saying, okay, everybody be one and sit on a rock. And, you know, there's benefits to that, but there's a point of inaction that it's not effective, if you know what I mean. It's almost playing into what they're doing because we really need to take action in certain ways, obviously peacefully, but to change it, it's not something that we're going to be able to meditate away.
No, absolutely. That's the problem with a lot of spirituality is that people are trained not to apply it to reality around them.
Right.
I mean, it's good to be in that state of love and light and to be in that state of constant love and constant giving, but you can't sit on a rock. You've got to realize that if you're in a state of non-duality, as they talk about, and you're in a state of unconditional love and you're in a state of oneness, then why are there people suffering in the world?
Right.
Due to your inaction, because it is due to your inaction. Everybody should be speaking out about this stuff. When you see an injustice in the world, it's being perpetrated against you. Injustice towards one is injustice towards all. And we tend to make sure our own little bubble of reality is all perfect and love and light. And oh, I won't look at that because that's negative. That makes me feel negative. Well, that's just fear. You're in fear of the feeling it's bringing up in you, and you're failing to address the problem. You're failing to apply your love and light to the reality that you inhabit. And so how much in love are you? How unconditional is this love, and how much of it's actually fear? That's what people are failing to see. They're just not applying these understandings to the world they live in, and that's what we need to do, because we need to have that balance, and people are just out of balance with it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, too, because Bruce Lipton said one time that either you're in growth or you're in, what was the other part? But it was a nice analogy, because it was basically the love and fear thing. But it took the part of protection and growth. That's what it is. And it kind of took that part of, you know, fear can have that element, too, of being protection or being something that you think of as a positive thing, but it really is fear masking itself as something else.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's what we find in a lot of the spiritual and New Age movements, is these are people who are absolutely in fear. And that, I mean, they've seen this world around them and they haven't liked it, so they've gone down this New Age path and they've learned about all this great spiritual stuff you can do to maintain a high vibration, and they do it. But then at the last turn, they lead them down this blind alley where they sit in this little bubble of inaction. And really what they're supposed to do is now apply everything that they've just learned to the reality around them and to lead by example, to be the change they want to see in the world and to live in Lakesh, like we all are each other. That is the way to change it. It's so simple. It's so ridiculously simple that people just can't see it.
I know, it's just sad because, like I say, there's a lot of false paths, or not false. I mean, obviously there's good benefits to all of this information, but it's the point of action that needs to be done that I think a lot of people miss in these things. And it's the same. I mean, you don't need to go out and protest every day in a rage. Like, there's ways of, you know, making your voice heard without being too much in, you know, anger or...
Absolutely. The best way to protest against the system is to stop complying with it, stop going along with it, stop participating in it. I mean, it's been good to see the Occupy movements and all these people out there expressing solidarity, but they're lacking direction, and it's almost like they're fighting a ghost, because when you fight against the system and fight against the machine, you're just hitting hot air. It's not real. It's just an idea. It's just a meme. The best way to escape it is to, I mean, all the people in the Occupy movements need to find out where they all live and build that community that they have in the Occupy movement within the community where they live. Get that solidarity happening amongst their neighbors so that you can all disconnect from the system in mass. That's what we need to do. Start supporting each other. And yeah, that's the way to stop supporting the system, is to start supporting each other, because the system is designed to make you just support the system and to keep you divided from everybody. So therefore, obviously, if it's working so hard to make you do those two things, then obviously the way to escape it is to do the exact opposite, to unite with the community around you and to serve your neighbors. Serve creation. Serve yourself and your neighbors. Put it all on an equal stage and serve creation, serve reality, and improve reality by your presence in it, because everything this system does is designed to make you do the opposite. Big clue in that.
Yes, true enough. And yeah, and I've kind of started looking at things like that in that perspective, like, okay, what are they trying to say here? And obviously, you know, do the opposite or look deeper into what's really going on. In your video, Reprogramming Your Brain, you were talking about turning off your TV. It's something I agree with fully. Can you go into it a bit further, though, and why that's a very good idea?
Well, TV programs you into a false reality. It basically sits there and tells you what reality is, and you believe it. It tells you how to think. It tells you how to dress. It tells you how to interact with your neighbors. It provides yardsticks for you to measure yourself by. You've got to look like this, and you've got to have the latest fashions and the latest exploding shoes, or you're a lesser person. And if you've got any blemishes on your face, well, they're not going to like you, and you need to buy this stuff from us. And all these things to make you feel like you're not a perfect being, while feeding you a completely false reality, telling you that, oh, look, we've got to go and bomb Iran because the television said so. That's all anybody knows. I mean, you ask people why we have to go and bomb Iran, they say, oh, because this and because that and because this. Well, actually, the reason they're actually giving, and they don't even know it, is because the television and the newspapers, who are all controlled by the same people, told them that we have to go and bomb Iran. That's all that they really know. They've probably never even been there and met the people. It's on the other side of the planet. They have no idea, but the television said it's a good idea. And so we have to go along with it because that's what the president wants to do, and I'm not being patriotic if I don't go along with what they want. I mean, it's all fiction. It's complete fiction. And not only that, it produces alpha waves and it just lulls you into this hypnotic state, and then it programs you to believe this is what reality is. That's why they call them TV programs. You're sitting there being programmed.
Yeah, they're programs, yeah, and it's true.
Yeah.
And those alpha waves are real, and a lot of people don't really realize that, and it's not the same with every type of media. It's predominantly from the TV.
Oh, absolutely. It's the flicker rate and the carrier waves and stuff. I mean, they've done experiments where you can get a native from a country who's never seen a television. You can put him down in front of a television, and it takes about 45 minutes for him to actually get sucked into watching it. You know, he can't believe why these people are sitting around watching this box. But after 45 minutes, he starts to settle into it. And then the next day, you can put the same person down in front of the TV, and within 2 minutes, they're back in that mode.
Right?
And then the next day, it's like 30 seconds. And then it becomes almost instantaneous. You sit down in front of this thing, and it also becomes addictive because you're used to that energetic state. It's hard to relax if you're just sitting there. You know, people who watch TV every night, try turning your television off and just sitting there and seeing how hard it is for you to relax. You won't be able to relax until you turn the TV on because you're used to that energy field that it generates. And it's got you, and it's programming you into believing a false reality. It does it every day. And we go to work and we talk about what we saw on the television. We think we're informed on current affairs and on current events because we watch television and we buy newspapers, who are all run by six people, and we've never actually been out and done anything. All we've done is work our butts off to try to keep our head above water and been programmed into this false reality that the television gives us. They're insidious things. They're absolutely insidious. And that's why they were invented, and that's why they were put into everybody's homes.
Right, and they make them cheap, and they make them accessible just for that. I imagine that, you know, they're probably only making that much money on them, but they, you know, they want them to be there. Because I noticed that of everything that's on the market, the prices of TVs just constantly drop, you know, from the minute it gets in the store till, you know, 6 months later, it's half the price.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And the new digital stuff, the new digital system that they've got, because digital is all, I mean, you're digital. It can affect you a lot more. They can program you a lot more with a digital set. Once they introduced digital, they phased out analog altogether because they didn't have enough control over people with analog. You know, so they, not only did they didn't even give you a choice. They just took it away. So, you know, they get you addicted to this television and then you have to get the digital setup if you still want TV. I don't even own one. I've never actually owned a television.
No, I haven't owned one. And actually, I've never owned one myself, but yeah, I haven't had one in the house in 10 years or more. And it's amazing because now when I'm in the room with a TV, like if I'm over at a friend's house or my family's place, I can actually feel it. Like it's a strange feeling, but I can feel the energy. It's almost like a static in the air because I'm so used to not being around one.
Yeah, it's very, very uncomfortable. It's a very unsettling feeling being around a television.
It is.
Haven't had one in my house for many years. My ex-wife used to own a television, had one in the house then. But I haven't had one in the house with me, I think, since about 1995.
Right. Yeah, about the same. As soon as I could choose to be away from it, I did. And because, yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, a lot of people have trouble breaking away from. But once you do, you start realizing just how negative it is, too. Like you were saying, like people are trying to make you feel like less than a being. And there's a lot of ridicule. And it's not a feeling of harmony. And I don't think that's what human beings are really about.
Well, it's designed to do that. It's designed to create an attitude of competition and designed to make you judge yourself and make you feel like you're a lesser person. Because, I mean, what they provide with you on television, everybody's beautiful. You know, there's always the beautiful people and the billboards and the makeup and all the stuff. All these people are airbrushed and photoshopped and, you know, they change their bone structure and they change their hair and their eyes and their nostrils. I mean, they change everything about them.
Right.
And they make someone that we perceive this to be beautiful, and it's something that you are going to find completely unobtainable. But if you buy our product, you might have a better chance at getting there. And once you do, you will be a real person. You won't be the lesser person that you are now. And you're just a little person, the little guy out there watching TV, out there in little guy land, and the little guy can never make a difference. And you know, if you buy this stuff and you start hanging with the right people and you get enough possessions and stuff around you and enough money in the bank, well, you might get accepted. I mean, this is all the TV shows, all of the everything. It's all programmed to make you think that you're not what you are and to give you yardsticks that are unobtainable. So you spend your life chasing this fantasy. That's what television's all about. And if you didn't have all these yardsticks to measure yourself by, why would you consider yourself to be anything but perfect? Why would you consider yourself to be anything but the perfect creation that you are, that is here to experience the unique frequency that is yourself?
Well, exactly. And like nobody can replace anyone. And like all of our energy is perfect the way it is. We don't need to be anything else but ourselves. And, you know, that what was in you, you know, bring it out and it'll save you. And I think that is very true. I didn't quote that very well, but that type of meaning, though, is definitely what people need to get into, I think, to really make a big difference in this world. You were talking about in reprogramming your brain. How would you suggest people deprogram themselves from these things? Not just avoidance, but how to make those connectors in the brain resistant to things.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that people find that they're addicted to their emotions. If you look at how the brain works, I mean, you can think of the brain as an instrument that turns possibility into actuality. It's a quantum instrument. And it gets fed food that it uses to create reality. It needs fuel. And the fuel that we give it is actually emotional content. It's our perception of reality and the emotions that we attach to that perception. We feed that to our brain, and the brain uses that as fuel to create reality. So if you're a person who's always angry or always depressed, and you get up in the morning and you think, okay, I'm going to be happy today. I'm not going to be an angry person anymore. And you try to be happy, but within half an hour of getting up, you find that you're angry again. You're screaming at someone, and it isn't until you've screamed at someone or you've found someone and harvested their energy that you actually feel good about yourself. You know, we tend to do this because our brain gets addicted to the food we give it. Well, not addicted, but dependent upon the food that we give it. And you've got these neuropeptides that get put into your bloodstream. And these are generated by emotion. There's gray matter in your heart. They're trying to suss out what it does. A lot of people say this is the same tissue that's in your brain, and this is where these neuropeptides come from. The people are still arguing about it, basically, but you can try it yourself. You can put yourself in an emotional state, say where you're happy, just turn the corners of your mouth up and smile, and you'll feel this feeling. You'll feel this feeling run up your spine. And this is energy, neuropeptide energy, going to your brain. And your brain has all these receptors, and they start feeling this energy coming and these certain neuropeptides coming. And so they kill brain cells. New brain cells are created with more receptors for this type of neuropeptide, because the more receptors it's got, the more food it gets, the more reality it can create. That's the kind of way it works. If you can think of your body like this, think of it as a quantum computer that creates a holographic reality, and your brain is actually the instrument that generates that reality. It turns possibility into actuality and projects it on a quantum field. That's kind of the way it all works. I mean, there is no matter. You can go and look through Lipton's work and all this sort of work. You can realize that this truly is a holographic reality that's created by perception. And it's all emotionally based. And that's what I tried to cover in Reprogramming Your Brain, is how you can change the emotional content of what you're sending to your brain, and then you can change your reality by changing that content.
Right, and I agree. Like, everything is emotion, you know. Even psychic energy, as far as I'm concerned, is emotion. Like, I think there's a language of emotion that a lot of people aren't aware of because they haven't tuned into it enough. And I think it's something that kind of the shamans get into, and some of the higher spiritual teachers. Have you ever had experience with that type of training, or?
Well, no, it's just all stuff that I've found out through meditation and stuff. Most of my shamanistic training or teachings or anything like that, I've just got through meditation. I've later sort of confirmed it by talking to people or researching it or stuff like that. But emotion is one of the higher senses that we can still access. But what we fail to understand is that emotion is actually a language. It's right. It's the language of electromagnetism. We are actually creating an energy field based on our emotional state at any time. And we're projecting that into reality around us, and we're actually talking to reality, and reality is talking back to us energetically. But a lot of people don't realize it. They just think emotion is this feeling they get. But, you know, okay, it's a feeling. It's not just a mental feeling. It's also a physical feeling. It's actually creating physical changes in your body, an electromagnetic field that's creating physical changes in your body. So it's changing your body chemistry. And it's also changing the electrical chemistry around you. And reality is trying to talk back to you, but you're not listening. That's the problem that most people have. They just don't understand that a language, that emotion is actually a language. And
it
we've
is,
got
yeah.
many other higher senses as well.
Right. But yeah, emotion definitely is a language. And, you know, I would encourage anybody to start listening to it and being able to decipher it and understand, because I find the same way with me. Pretty much everything I've learned has come from within. And then same thing, I go out and verify it and go, wow, that was actually right. And it's all been through that communication of emotion.
Well, yeah, you'll find that all information exists in the field around you. It's all there energetically in the field around you, and you can basically download it, but you've just got to know how to decode that information. And you'll find that all memory exists in the water as well. I mean, the research into people like Emoto and some of the experiments I've done where they found out that water has memory.
Right.
And it would appear that water is actually like the RAM drive of the planet, you know. Your body's 85% water, and when you die, all of your experience that is encoded in the water in your body, everything you experience gets encoded in that water in your body. That goes back to the groundwater when you die, and it's all connected. So the water contains the collective memory of all creation. So we have senses that can access all of this information, but we're cut off from all of these senses. We're locked into this state where we're only experiencing 3% of reality, and we're only got this little 5 cents narrow bandwidth. And all of this has been done by design. If you look at the state of the human system, you see that our endocrine system has been completely shut down. Our pineal gland is completely shut down, and this is from things like fluoride and stuff. So this has all been done deliberately. If this endocrine system was active and our pineal gland was open, we would start experiencing a lot more of reality. We're reduced to a state where we're virtually non-functional, you know. We're barely functional, functioning on 3% of our actual capability. And this has all been taken from us, and now we're being offered this new digital version, transhuman version, the version where we can all link up with each other digitally, and we've got the internet, we can have access to all this information, which we should be able to access anyway through the energy field and through the water table, you know, like other animals can. You know, everything else that lives in this reality lives in harmony with reality. Animals can sense seasons coming. They can sense all sorts of things about reality that we can't, but we should be able to. We only can't because of the state of our DNA and our endocrine system and our basic biology. That's what's stopping us from being able to access these higher things. So it's all tied together, all the physical, all the spiritual, all the emotional, all the biological, all the electrical. It's all tied together, and people are just failing to see that bigger picture and realize that they're still speaking with these higher senses all the time. They just don't realize they are. They've just forgotten how to decode the information.
Right. And that's interesting. You know, I never even put that together as far as animals drinking from the water and learning about their environment. You know, it's true because it does have memory. It would have encoding in it. And it's probably why they know so much more than we do, you know, because we're just not aware of those senses anymore.
Well, the thing is it's been done on purpose. I mean, it has to have been done on purpose, because even whether you believe in biblical creation, whether you believe in spiritual creation, whether you believe in evolution, it's irrelevant. Whatever you believe in how we got here, how did such a highly evolved creature as humankind, a creature who is able to do the things that we do, how did we get to a state where we are operating to only 3% of our capability? I mean, would God create us like this? Would we evolve to this high state? Well, of course we wouldn't. If we were left to evolve to our own devices, and we'd be fully active like everything else. And if we were fully active and we could read reality around us the way the rest of nature can, imagine what we would be capable of.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure our forefathers did once, because when you look at these megalithic monuments all over the world, I mean, obviously they knew a great deal more than we did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't believe that any of these things were built by ETs. I think that we did them ourselves because we had all of our higher senses active. I think that something has happened that has locked us down, and I think it's been done by design. But I think we're capable of doing absolutely amazing things that seem like magic to us. You know, we just wouldn't believe ourselves to be capable of what we can actually do. But we can do this stuff. It's just that we've been prevented from accessing these higher senses and connecting with reality the way we're supposed to. And we're trained that it's all mumbo jumbo and it's all spiritual rubbish and magic and all this sort of stuff.
It's not.
It's just the way reality works. But we're locked into this whole left brain thing, you know. Like, you get, the more educated you get, the more active your left brain becomes, and the more your right brain shuts down, because that's the way education is designed. And so you try to talk to people about this, and they go, "Oh, no, it's not right. I've got a degree. I know more than you." Well, no, you've just been brainwashed more than me. That's all, you know.
Right. And history is a good indicator. On your site, so thecrowhouse.com, you have a book called Earth's Forbidden Secrets. And I think it's really good to go back in the past and look at these things and say, yes, the humans did build this, and this is what we're capable of, and we can be even more than that. So I wanted to ask you a few questions about the book that you have on your website available. And one part of it, you were talking about basically the walls that are at Sacsayhuaman in Cusco, Peru, and they have like a really strange formation where they've all been kind of like, they look like they've all been squished together. And you were talking about the diaries of Percy Fawcett. I was wondering if you could kind of explain that in the book.
Well, yeah, Percy Fawcett was an amazing character. He really was. I mean, he traveled around. He mapped most of Peru with a sextant and a compass on
wow.
foot.
That's crazy.
Absolutely incredible. And he ended up, he worked for the British government. He worked for all sorts of governments. Like, he surveyed the boundary of Paraguay and stuff like this, because the local governments wouldn't trust each other to map their borders. So they approached, other governments to say, who can you recommend? And everyone said, oh, I'll get this guy, Percy Fawcett, Colonel Fawcett was a retired officer of the British Army. He was a veteran fighter in the Boer Wars and stuff. He'd done all this incredible stuff, and he was like the original Indiana Jones.
Nice.
He actually heard rumors of lost cities and all sorts of stuff, and he went experimenting and looking for them. He found some incredible talk of methods and plants that were used for softening stone. And he actually had met a person who claimed to have had an experience where his spurs melted from walking through these small red plants. And he found there were also birds that carved holes in cliff faces by using these plants. They'd chew the plant leaves and they'd squish them up and then they'd tap the rock with them. They'd rub it all over the rock, then they'd come back and tap the rock and be able to scoop it out like plasticine. And there's talks of natives still making statues by softening stone. And it would appear that that's how most of these walls were built, that there is a method of softening stone. I mean, when you look at some of these walls, they look like they're big lumps of plasticine that have sort of sagged and they're just sort of melted together.
Yeah.
But the outside's all unfinished. I mean, the joints are perfect. You can't even fit a razor blade in any of the joints, and some of them have got, you know, up to eight or 12 sides. And you can't even fit a razor blade anywhere, and there's no mortar. And yet the outside surfaces of them look all lumpy and unfinished. And there's even areas where it looks like it's sagged, and it looks like people have poked it with a stick. And I would suggest that they didn't hoist all these huge monolithic stones into place. And, I mean, think about it. You'd have to cut that. No, no, that's not quite right. We'll bring it down again. We'll have to trim that off a little bit. Now try it again. Oh, no, that's
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not possible. These things weigh 20, 30 tons, some of these stones. They're huge.
Right.
There's no way you'd be able to do this and get them perfect. So if they were basically put in there with formwork, and you can almost see where the formwork would be, and you can see where these little reliefs are, these little lugs, you know, where it would have sagged. And it all looks like it was put there wet. And they just basically poured these huge walls into place one stone at a time. And there's legends there that talk about the fact that they did this and they can still do it. But all these sorts of things are ignored. And I believe that there's stuff lying all over the planet which tells a completely different story about history than what we're being presented with. And the main reason I wrote that book and put it out there was because I just wanted to say to people, well, hey guys, look at this. Look at all this stuff that's lying all around the planet that tells you that everything that they've told you about history is wrong. And if you can understand that everything they've told you about the past is wrong and it's all fiction, what makes you think they're telling you the truth about the present or about the future or about anything?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well, why would they cover all this up? That's the question. Why go to such an extraordinary effort to cover all this stuff up?
I know, it's crazy when you think about it. I mean, because it's so huge. And I think that's what a lot of people have trouble with when they first get into this information is that they just can't believe the scope of it and how could that be possible. But it's definitely something has happened. I mean, it's just we can look and see visually with our own eyes that these things existed and, you know, they have to have explanations.
Well, that's the thing. So that's what got me into all this at a very early age was the Giza Pyramid. That's what got me started on this journey. And once I started looking into that, I started realizing that there were ancient monuments all over the planet which told a different story to the past. And then you start investigating that, and eventually, of course, it leads to investigating UFOs and things like that. And then once you do that, it starts leading to government cover-ups and government conspiracies, and then that leads back to ancient history. And then you start thinking, well, hang a minute, the issue here isn't the pyramids or it isn't the UFOs or it isn't any of this stuff individually. The issue is that we've been lied to on all counts about everything. Why? Why is this entire false reality set up? And then you start investigating the body and you start finding out how locked down the human experience actually is. And you start thinking, there's all of this stuff going on around us that we're not perceiving because we're locked into this little boxed view of reality. We're just programmed into this. But all of this stuff that's lying around the planet is left. I mean, it tells what we're capable of. But people just don't notice it because they're programmed into their left brain. But that's the thing. The question isn't one of these things in itself. It's the fact that the whole system has been constructed. Why has it been constructed in the first place? That's the issue.
Right, for sure, and it definitely has been. Going back to Giza, though, there was an interesting part of your book, too. It's kind of reminded me when you brought it up. There was a stone, the Famine Stele, that you were talking about as far as how it relates to the Great Pyramids.
Well, yeah, I mean, that actually tells how the pyramids were constructed. The Famine Stele, it's there on, I think it's Elephantine Island, and it talks about how to manufacture limestone and how to create the stones that they needed for the monuments that they built. It even discusses building three monuments. It doesn't say where, but it discusses building three monuments, and it gives methods that could be used for synthesizing limestone. And what you find is that there were people that actually tried it. They actually took the recipe from the famine stella and they tried making this limestone, and it all worked. It came out exactly looking like the limestone that was used for the pyramids. But, of course, you're not allowed to take any limestone from the pyramids for testing.
No.
And another thing they did was they did some experiments with some of the limestone from the Giza quarry, and they found that it was water-soluble. So you could just put a lump of this stuff in a glass of water, and in the morning it would be a paste. And then you could add certain stuff to it, like perhaps all the stuff that they mention on the famine stella, and you would create this synthetic limestone using actual limestone to create it. And that would appear to be how they did the pyramids. I mean, it's right there in the stella. It tells you that this is what we do. We mix this stuff up, and then we basically pour it. So, again, with the pyramids, there may not have been any of this dragging of limestone blocks up places. They may have simply poured the pyramids. I mean, of course, you've still got stones in the center, like all the King's Chamber, all these granite blocks in the center that, again, pose another problem.
Right.
But the actual bulk of the pyramids themselves, the actual limestone blocks that make up the bulk of the pyramid, is every indication that these were poured. Because, again, there's no mortar. And they're just there in place. And you think about it, you could put up formwork. You could, the limestone's right there in the quarry. It's water soluble. They've got this stella there that says, look, if we add all this other stuff to it, you create this substance and it's really strong. When it solidifies, it's a lot stronger than the original limestone. You're going to look at the rock of the pyramid and you see all these fine particles of shell and all this stuff in there, exactly like they tell you to do in this mix. But the authorities say, oh, no, that's just fiction. That's just fiction. They didn't do that. And they start coming out with all these incredibly complex ways that they build the pyramids, none of which seem to work. So, I mean, I think that the answer's been sitting there the whole time, and they told you how they did it, and it's right there on Elephantine Island.
Right. And it didn't work. This is the thing, like, as far as their theories, because it's all been disproven, but yet people will still accept it as fact. There's no way that they could have built a ramp big enough to get to the top of the pyramid. It's just not possible. It would have to be a mile long, and then there's a mountain where they would need to have been, you know. So.
Yeah, I mean, and the size of these blocks, I mean, how many people, I mean, the figures they give and the time span, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's nothing, no way has so far been acceptable. Nothing that they've given us has been acceptable. Nothing that they've given us actually works. And yet you've got this stella there on Elephantine Island saying, hey, this is how we did it. And
right.
They say, oh, that's fiction. That's not possible. And yet this guy that I mentioned in the book actually did it. He actually made a block of limestone, and it looks pretty well like the limestone that's in the Giza pyramids. And it's right there, Dr. Davidovis, I think his name was.
Yeah, yeah.
And, they've done it, and they've basically proven it, and all of this is being ignored. I think it was the Geopolymer Institute that actually made it. They did all the investigation and figured they may as well try this recipe to see if it worked. And it did.
Right, and that's really fascinating. Like, all the research in this book is absolutely fascinating. Like, anybody interested in alternate history, well, probably real history, should definitely check it out. In one part of the book, too, you were talking about how there was some proof that humans go way further back than they're saying, and it's possible that we could have coexisted with the dinosaurs.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's all sorts of evidence to say that we existed with dinosaurs. For a start, there's pictures of dinosaurs that are painted in caves. I mean, we didn't discover the first dinosaur until the late 1800s. So how on earth were people in the 1500s and in the even prehistoric days drawing these things on cave walls if they hadn't seen one?
Right.
That's the thing. How could people be drawing anatomically correct dinosaurs? I mean, the last sighting of a pterodactyl was apparently in the 1930s or something. I mean, there's been all sorts of reports of dinosaurs. I don't think anything they've told us about history is correct. We've got dinosaur footprints in the coral reefs out here in Australia, in Western Australia. There's even a trilobite that was crushed under someone's shoe. I've got a picture in the second chapter of the book in Riddles from the Past where there's a shoe. It's a shoe print. It's not a footprint. It's a shoe print. It's a stitched shoe, and it's got a trilobite crushed beneath the heel. And this trilobite, they tell us these things existed, like some ridiculous date they give it. So how did this guy squash one under his shoe? And how is there even a fossilized shoe print? And you know how long it takes to make a fossil?
Yeah, quite a while. Yeah,
how come this is a stitched shoe? It's got a heel and it's got stitches around it. I mean, did cavemen wear stitched shoes? I mean, yeah, there's all sorts of evidence to say that everything they've told you about history is completely wrong. How can there be, there was a tomb in England where there was a guy who had a brontosaurus drawn on the blade of his sword.
Yeah,
what's that all about? The swords from the Mesopotamian era that show pterodactyls and stuff like this. I mean, why are these things there? Stegosauruses, plesiosauruses. You know, what we call dragons in the old stories, a lot of these things were very likely pterodactyls.
Right.
I mean, nothing that they've told us is true. Why should dinosaurs be true as well? I mean, in Mexico, there's pictures of brontosauruses in caves. And things like this, pictures of tyrannosauruses. And these are anatomically correct.
Right.
How could you just make this stuff up? If you're going to make something up, you know, why would it be an anatomically correct dinosaur? And why do all cultures have tales of dragons and things, you know?
Well, true enough. Even Helena Blavatsky, I think it was her book Isis Unveiled or something, where she was talking about that she had actually seen dragons in some museums, and then they just one day decided to take them all away and hide them down the basement or something like that. So she kind of addresses that too. Like, why would we have dragons in our culture, you know, in every single culture on Earth if they didn't exist in some state, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, reptile stories exist in all cultures, absolutely. Even Australian Aboriginals talk about reptiles that live beneath the Earth and control humanity from beneath the Earth. That's what it's in Aboriginal legend. You've got a lot of Arabic nations talk about their snake brothers. You got American Indians talking about their snake brothers. I mean, the Sioux and all these are all these names are related to snakes and reptiles. You've got Ukiah, the snake goddess who bred mankind into existence. You've got the Indian Nagas. I mean, it's everywhere. You've got the Chitahuri in Africa. You've got all of these reptilian races and references to dragons and reptiles. Even in Ireland, you've got the story of how Ireland wasn't freed until they drove all the reptiles out. And, so it exists in all cultures, yeah. So why would we have these reptile stories related to creation and related to dragons in all cultures, in all continents on Earth, cultures that never had anything to do with each other?
Right. So in your opinion, what do you think the benefit is to be covering up this information? Like, I can't possibly fathom a reason why they would do this. I mean, I know they are. It's right in front of your face when you start looking at these things. But do you have any ideas on a motive?
Well, it's control. It's control. It's about control of energy. It's about control of the energy of Earth, control of the entire human race. You know, the human race is being used to basically extract all the energy that this planet can provide. It's almost like the Earth is being strip-mined and raped energetically, and the medium that is being used to do it is the human race. We've been put into this state of... We're always in a state of survival. We have to survive. But the way we have to survive is by collecting paper. The only way we can collect this paper is by rampant capitalism. And capitalism can only be supported in a market where everything is temporary. Now, if you make a product, it's got to be out of break so you can make another one to replace it. Otherwise, your business doesn't work. So everything's made to break down. Everything's made to be disposable. And we have to keep replacing it, which means we have to keep raping more and more resources from the Earth until there's nothing left. It's like it's almost like human consciousness is eating itself, and we're eating the Earth, and we're basically, once we've done this, we're kind of being transformed into this transhuman, so we can go out and do it to other places. And it's all being presented to us as this wonderful evolution, this technological utopia that's been created for us. But really, it's just that we've been locked off from our higher senses. We're being offered a digital version. And it's almost, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I don't hate the human race or anything, but it's almost like the universe has a virus, and it is whatever has happened to control human consciousness is like a virus. And got transhumanists who basically want to go and assimilate the entire universe. And that's kind of what's happening. I think we're being bred into a machine culture that is totally controlled by a few megalomaniacal consciousnesses at the top. And we're basically, it's an attempt to take over all of reality with this new machine reality that these people want to control.
Right. And What do you recommend people can do, you know, just day to day, everyday people, you know, what do you recommend that they can do in their communities to start changing things?
Well, the best way to escape the system is to disconnect from the system. The best way to do that is to start serving your neighbors and serving the people around you, treating them like yourself. You've got to break down the barriers between people. We've got to start seeing other people as valid. We've got to start seeing even the people we disagree with and don't get along with, we've got to start realizing their perspective is valid. Even bad people who do bad things, often they're trained to be this way. They've had these realities where they've grown up in this incredibly negative situation and they've been trained to be what they are. You know, everybody needs love. Doesn't matter how disjointed and disgusting they are. They've been driven to that by this system itself. I think human consciousness has a huge potential, but we have to start respecting each other. We've got to start understanding the power that we have to make positive change. We don't have to go along with everything that's being done to us and all the rules and laws and stuff that are being inflicted on us. But the only way we can stand up against it is if we start respecting each other and so we can stand up in mass. And but, you know, of course, this takes little increments, but you can start by connecting with your neighbors around you. And then when they connect with the neighbors around them and you all start connecting each other, having town meetings again, giving information to people in an empowering way and leading by example. We've got to stop the rest of this infrastructure being put in place, things like smart meters, legislation that's put in place that prevents us from doing things like growing and sharing food. We have to absolutely boycott this type of legislation. So, I mean, everybody should start growing food and sharing it straight away.
Just make it impossible, right?
Yeah, make it impossible to enforce. Right. It's like when they wanted to introduce poll tax in England. Everybody refused to pay it, so they had to cancel the poll tax. There's laws in England where you'll get fined if you put your wheelie bin out on the wrong night. Everybody in England should put their wheelie bins out every night of the week.
This is true, because they can't ticket everybody. You know what I mean?
They can't. It makes it impossible to enforce. It's a way of protesting and saying, no, you are our servants and we won't do this. That's the problem. They say jump and we say how high. But we have to question, why are you asking me to jump and in whose benefit is my jump? You know, what's all this about? How do I benefit from jumping? Aren't you my employee? Aren't you a public servant? Why do I have to jump when you tell me to? Shouldn't you have to jump when I tell you to? Why is our country in the state it's in? Why are you introducing legislation which prevents me from being who and what I am? That's not what I employ you to do. That's the approach people need to have. But the only way they can stand up and do this is if they are connected with each other and they can stand together as community, put the common unity back in community, because that's what's missing.
I like that, common unity. It's excellent.
That's what the word's supposed to mean, community. That's where it comes from. But that's what's missing in our community is common unity.
Right, that's interesting. It's true. And there was even some places in the States that they started monitoring rainwater. You weren't allowed to collect that as well, because apparently that's government property or something like that.
Yeah, they're trying to control everything. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. How can someone say that the government owns the water that falls from the sky? I mean, who do these people think they are? Oh, I do own it because I wrote these words on this piece of paper that says I own it. See, look, it's got a fancy letterhead.
This is it, yeah.
And if you don't believe I own it, then I'm going to get these guys in blue uniforms to come around and put you in a cage because you don't go along with what I wrote on this piece of paper. That's basically what they're doing.
Exactly. It's sad, but true. It is a joke. It is, yeah. But hopefully we can get together and, you know, change things a bit or, you know.
Well, that's the plan. That's the plan. You know, with enough people speaking out about it and enough people talking about it and getting information out to others, we will change it. But it'll probably get a little bit more negative yet because there's still a lot of people asleep. And so it's going to have to get a little bit more in your face for some of them. But while it does, as long as we can maintain our energetic levels and maintain our consciousness and continue to lead by example and not be dissuaded from what we do, then we'll make slow and steady progress.
Right. Well, at least we are waking up. You know, it's amazing how many things when I was younger that just went right over my head. And then one day I kind of started questioning things. And then it just as soon as, just like a rock rolling down a hill, you know, eventually it's like this massive boulder, right? You start seeing more and more and more. And it's happening, which is good. Yeah. But anyways, I guess I should let you go. It's been almost an hour. Thank you so much for doing this with me, Max Egan. You are a wonderful person and a credit to our society. And please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, it gets a little bit difficult sometimes, but it's what I'm here to do. So yeah, I'll continue doing it.
Nice.
And thank you for having me on. Thank you for having the chat.
Thanks so much.